This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
It may be sooner or later, $200 a barrel.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. There's a prediction today oil could hit $200 within the next 6 months to 2 years. The warning of a so-called super spike is in research notes from a Goldman Sachs analyst. Oil hit its latest record this morning, surpassing $121 a barrel for the first time. The spike's due to worries about supply and a weakening of the dollar. At the same time, Chrysler is announcing a new incentive program today. The company's offering a prepaid card to lock in gas prices at $2.99 a gallon for 3 years if you buy certain cars or trucks. Swiss bank UBS is selling some of its subprime mortgages to American investment firm BlackRock. Some hope the multi-billion-dollar deal means the credit crisis is easing. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
BlackRock is paying UBS $15 billion for the package of subprime mortgages. That's a hefty 25% discount to the face value. UBS, therefore, is taking a $5 billion hit. Nevertheless, the deal will be a big relief. Switzerland's largest bank has been hammered by the credit crunch. So far, it's written off over $37 billion. Today's deal with BlackRock offers a glimmer of hope. The worst may be over. Haig Simonian of the Financial Times says mortgage-backed securities are now beginning to sell.
Life is returning to the markets, and at least some purchasers are emerging from the woodwork, and some people who want to sell are obtaining now marginally better than fire sale prices.
But UBS continues to suffer. The bank today unveiled another $11 billion loss for the first quarter and said that a further 5,500 jobs will go. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
There are other losses this morning as well. Fannie Mae reported a $2 billion hit in the first quarter. It was a $1 billion loss for home builder D.R. Horton. Wachovia doubled the size of its first quarter loss. Here's how all of that's translating on Wall Street right now. The Dow is down 62 points to 12,907. The Nasdaq is down 2 points to 2,461. And the S&P 500 is down 3 points to 1,404. European shares are lower, and it was a mixed day in Asia with Japan's Nikkei closed again for a holiday. Investors find out later today whether the ailing economy has put a damper on Walt Disney's bottom line. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
With gas close to $4 a gallon, a lot of summer vacations will probably be spent on the couch. That wouldn't be too bad for Disney. The biggest part of its revenue comes from ads on its TV networks. Its Achilles heel, though, may be the Magic Kingdom. Disney theme parks and cruise lines have suffered in prior recessions. But analyst Nicole Black at Wachovia expects the company will tough it out and even see profits increase.
They're very well diversified across things like movies, cable channels, network channels, resorts. They have a very large consumer products business.
One of Disney's best-known brands had a scare last week. Hannah Montana's 15-year-old star turned up in a racy magazine spread. Dade Hayes is Variety's New York bureau chief. He says Disney's contained the damage.
To me, it doesn't seem like a Lindsay Lohan meltdown.
Too bad Disney hasn't been able to contain high gas prices and consumer confidence. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
MGM Mirage said today its quarterly profit fell. The slowing economy is slowing things down in Vegas.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Advanta. Advanta salutes small business, the brave ones, the risk takers, all those who chase a dream and make their own way. By Clarkson Potter's The Splendid Table's How to Eat Supper, the cookbook inspired by the radio program for people who love to eat, available now. And by America's Family Physicians, offering patient-centered care so employees can better manage their health and employers better manage their costs. AAFP.org/value.
There's a healthy taste for locally grown food at farmers markets and in restaurants around the country. But when you consider what separates a restaurant kitchen that serves 75 meals a night from an institutional kitchen that serves 10,000, you can see how economies of scale are keeping the local food movement small. From WHYY in Philadelphia, Peter Crimmins reports.
John Cipollini is in charge of every meal served at the University of Pennsylvania. And to celebrate Penn's commitment to locally grown food, he planned a special dinner for 700 with items from nearby farms.
Asparagus was going to be one of the featured items, and delivery day came around, and we had had a cold snap, and lo and behold, no asparagus.
Instead, he told 700 customers to have more salad. That's embarrassing. So when Cipollini feeds 10,000, most of the food comes from large distributors. Cipollini can't risk his food supply on the vagaries of local farming.
We could probably single-handedly wipe out the free-range chicken population of Pennsylvania if we decided to buy nothing but very quickly, probably within a couple of days.
Local produce also tends to be pricier. Glenn Brendel grows peppers and tomatoes and herbs on a few dozen acres in Lancaster County. Recently, he said he visited a huge asparagus farm in Mexico.
When you have 1,000 acres of asparagus and somebody calls up and wants a ton and a half, and even if you only make a penny a pound on it, you know, you're still making a reasonable amount of money. If I have a little patch, say, quarter of an acre of asparagus, and I have to sell it for a penny a pound, it doesn't pay me to go down there and pick it.
A Philadelphia nonprofit called the Farm to Institution Project is trying to bridge the gap between farmers and institutional kitchens. Its director, Lindsay Gilmore, said one way is to ask the institutions to tailor their demand to what farmers can supply, and vice versa.
What we decided to do was develop a limited list of products that we would get an understanding of the volume that institutions need and then an understanding of the volume that the farmers could potentially supply and build the supply of those products.
In order for a relationship like that to work, it requires something you don't often see in the open market, loyalty. In Philadelphia, I'm Peter Crimmins for Marketplace.
Starting tomorrow, Marketplace Morning Report takes a look at the global food crisis with a series called Food Fight. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.